Hello and welcome to our program, Business News, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Dennis Martin, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from the San Antonio Business Journal here on OWL Radio. SeaWorld, making multiple major changes impacting San Antonio parks. The restructuring includes a new president for the company's two Alamo City parks. The article is written by W. Scott Bailey, senior reporter, the San Antonio Business Journal. SeaWorld Entertainment Incorporated has named Jody Davenport as the new president for SeaWorld San Antonio and its sister water park, Aquatica San Antonio. That move comes amid several other key personnel changes the Orlando-based company is making, including a surprise move impacting SeaWorld San Antonio's most recent president. Davenport has been with SeaWorld since 2020, most recently serving as Vice President of Finance and IT for the San Antonio Parks. Prior to joining SeaWorld, Davenport spent nearly 20 years at Six Flags Entertainment Corporation, where she held a variety of roles, including Director of Finance. Davenport will step into the position held by Byron Surrett, who said in late December he was stepping down to take some time off after a lengthy run with the company. But that break didn't last long, as SeaWorld said Surrett will hold one of the company's two Chief Parks Operations positions, overseeing SeaWorld's non-Florida parks, including the two in San Antonio. Kyle Miller will oversee operations for all Florida parks. Surrett, who is president of SeaWorld San Antonio and Aquatica San Antonio since 2019, told me last month, "I've been with the company 46 years and never had a summer vacation. I'd like to take some vacations this next year and just have fun." SeaWorld is making several other changes, including the creation of a new Chief Transformation Officer position. It's also named an Interim Chief Financial Officer and Treasurer and put two additional new park presidents in place. SeaWorld CEO Mark Swanson said the organizational changes will help the company improve its operational and financial results. In November, SeaWorld reported a net income of $134.6 million for the third quarter of 2022. It was a company record and a $36.5 million improvement over the same three-month period in 2019 prior to the pandemic. Total revenue for the quarter eclipsed $565 million, also a record. "We had back-to-back really good years," Surrett said in December. "I think I'm going out in a good time." Instead, now it appears, he will have to put those vacation plans on hold. City Council votes to start eminent domain on Moses Rose's hideout. San Antonio City Council voted to begin the eminent domain process of Moses Rose's hideout on Thursday, setting up a negotiation process that's the latest in a years-long saga over a piece of the Alamo redevelopment puzzle. If a deal cannot be reached, the city will condemn and claim the site for the planned Alamo Museum. The Alamo Trust, a division of the Texas General Land Office, or GLO, have been trying to purchase the property as part of the construction of a museum. Now, with the eminent domain process officially started, City Attorney Andy Segovia said during the meeting that his office would enter the negotiation process and try to reach a deal to acquire the site before legal proceedings. A motion that was put forward by Councilperson Jalen McKee Rodriguez to delay the vote until February 9th in order to give all parties a chance to reach a deal before kicking off the eminent domain process failed to pass. Speaking to the Business Journal prior to the vote, Moses Rose's owner, Vince Cantu, said that He has never been asked to negotiate with the Alamo Trust or the General Land Office. Rather, he was asked for an ideal or happy price after an initial offer. He gave them $17 million and says that the organization has threatened his property with eminent domain since, which he said is not conducive to a good faith negotiation. But to have somebody just bludgeon me, run me over, lie about me, and threaten to seize my property on the grounds of the Alamo, that's the part that's really hard to deal with, he said. Kate Rogers, executive director of the Alamo Trust, said that it's unfortunate that the process has reached this stage. She said in an interview this week that in the 2 years that she's been at the helm, she sought to meet with the property owners surrounding the Alamo and negotiate with them on a fair deal. Cantu rejected the trust's offers backed by third-party appraisals and has come to the price of $17 million without any further negotiation. So far, he's not been able to provide any justification as to how he arrived at that figure, she said. Cantu claims the city has no interest in pursuing eminent domain on his property, as most of the revenue from the future museum will go towards the state. Rogers said the city, as a partner and part owner of the Alamo site, is stepping in where the Alamo Trust does not have the authority. The return on the project is to be borne by the city, the state, and the county, she said. So in that vein, the city has stepped forward to say, as a partner of the state and the trust on this project, we don't want to see it get derailed. Kevin Covey and Paul Covey of Gray Street Partners were among the many supporters that spoke before council on using eminent domain to acquire the bar. Paul Covey argued that in his extensive process with the eminent domain process, property owners are treated as fairly as possible. The process is laden with opportunities for tax benefits and appeals. You don't just get the value of the property, Covey said. You also get any enterprise value. So if you've got a business that's earning you money, you get compensated for the loss of that business as well as the real estate. So I do feel that the gentleman will be fairly treated in this process. And that article is written by James McCandless, reporter, San Antonio Business Journal. Frederich Lofts development begins taking shape as demolition gets underway. Dallas-based Provident Realty Advisors, in partnership with the San Antonio Housing Trust, plans to build the long-anticipated Frederich Lofts, a 358-unit mixed-use apartment complex costing $93 million. Abatement procedures have begun on the Frederich Air Conditioning Complex on the east side, paving the way for its eventual demolition at the end of the first quarter of 2023. In its place, Dallas-based Provident Realty Advisors, in partnership with the San Antonio Housing Trust, plans to build the long-anticipated Frederich Lofts, a 358-unit mixed-use apartment complex costing $93 million. Since the development was first proposed, the property has traded hands, suffered community pushback, experienced protracted wait times for public funding, and seen increasing security bills due to vandalism. The demolition and abatement work, which is being performed by Dallas's Lloyd D. Neighbors Demolition, will take approximately 10 weeks to complete. Abatement or removal of hazardous material from a structure for safe construction is the first step in being able to safely demolish the non-historic portions of the Frederich complex. Demolition is expected to take up to 9 months afterwards, before construction on Frederich Lofts can begin. 24 units at Frederich Lofts are reserved for tenants making 60% of the area median income, which is around $50,000 for a four-person household, according to HUD. The site of the former air conditioner factory was purchased from Dallas resident John Miller for $4.73 million, according to county deed records. Miller still owns a 3,500 square foot section of the former factory, including the original Friedrich air conditioning building with the familiar Friedrich refrigerators sign. These properties are not included in the Friedrich Lofts demolition and development plans. The development is one of multiple derelict properties around the city, boasting some form historic repute, slated for rehabilitation, including projects such as the Dream On Group's rehabilitation of the Bacilla Frocks building, also on the east side, and the Scobie Complex on the west side. Also on the west side, an Austin developer is plotting the rehabilitation of the old Spaghetti Warehouse building. And that article was written by Ramzi Abu Ghalioum, reporter, San Antonio Business Journal. Let's move up Interstate 35 to New Braunfels. $40 million riverfront hotel planned for New Braunfels. Preliminary rendering of planned Spring Hill Suites by Marriott development slated for New Braunfels, Texas-based Oldham Goodwin convinced the hospitality industry has survived the worst of the pandemic, plans to develop a new hotel project in New Braunfels along the banks of the Guadalupe River. The Spring Hill Suites by Marriott at River Village is expected to cost more than $40 million to construct and could help the historic city some 30 miles north of San Antonio grab a larger share of travel business stakeholders believe is on the rebound. "It's almost shocking how much optimism there is," said Hunter Goodwin, president and COO of Oldham Goodwin, which is based in Bryan and has offices in multiple cities, including San Antonio. "If you look at New Braunfels in particular, it was a market that really performed exceptionally well during COVID. Work on the new hotel, which will span some 136,000 square feet and house more than 140 rooms, is expected to begin in the third or fourth quarter of this year on a site south of Highway 46 tucked between Interstate 35 and one of the state's more popular waterways. The seven-story hotel is expected to be completed by early 2025, which will put its opening roughly 5 years after the outbreak of COVID-19, a virus that put the industry in a tailspin. Confirmation of the project follows a new survey conducted by Morning Consult for the American Hotel and Lodging Association, which found that 60% of Americans are more likely to stay in hotels this year than in 2022. The same survey also indicates that business travel was rebounding. AHLA President and CEO Chip Rogers said there is cause for optimism among hotel operators. While some projects in the region were started pre-pandemic and pushed on to completion despite the uncertainties, new hotel construction starts, including the Spring Hill Suites project, may be a better barometer of that heightened confidence. Part of New Braunfels' appeal are its multiple rivers that flow through the city, offering a variety of outdoor activities. Oldham Goodwin, which also has brokerage and management services expertise, plans to tap into those hill country assets with its latest build. "It will have waterfront access. It will have a resort-style feel," Goodwin said. "It's going to have quite a bit of meeting space. It's going to have very robust food and beverage offerings." Oldham Goodwin, which has developed or repositioned several hospitality projects, is teaming with noted chef and restaurateur Tim Love on the New Braunfels venture. Goodwin said others interested in the development can reach out to the firm's capital division. "What we're trying to create is the perfect utopia," Goodwin said. And that article was written by W. Scott Bailey. Food Park from a group of Southside locals is headed for HDRC. A group of Southside natives is planning to build an outdoor food hall near Mission San Jose. The yard at Mission Trails currently slated for 3005 Roosevelt Avenue, just a few minutes north of the Mission, is going before the Historic Design and Review Commission, HDRC, for conceptual approval next week. The group is also seeking approval for partial demolition and renovation of existing structures at the site, which have fallen into disrepair. The area surrounding the Missions has seen its fair share of redevelopment recently, with more on the way. City Council recently awarded a contract for the construction of the World Heritage Center educational facility at the former Mission Drive-In site. Development of the food hall is being led by Denise Anderson, her husband Justin Anderson, and her sister Esther Pacheco. Denise Anderson told the Business Journal that her family has deep roots in the South Side and Mission San Jose, with grandparents that lived in a house outside of the Mission's gate. Driving past the dilapidated site one day with her family last year, they saw that the land was for sale. The trio decided that it was the right time to invest in their neighborhood. As a longtime resident of the South Side, growing up here, we've seen a lot of developments come in and out, and most of the time, it's by big developers, she said. We thought that this would be not only something good for our family, but good for the community, because so much of the community is our family. On the operator side, the group aims to bring in food entrepreneurs and offer them space to develop their concepts in a food truck-like environment without having to acquire the resources or feel the pressure to make the jump to a brick-and-mortar location. The goal is to really bridge that gap and offer some in-between options with smaller brick-and-mortar type space, an outdoor food court, to allow people to come in and take a chance on themselves and not have the fear of, if this doesn't work out, I just signed a year lease, she said. At the upcoming HDRC meeting, the group is hoping for conceptual approval of a design that focuses on environmentally friendly materials. Not only are we looking to give back to the community, we are extremely conscious and focused on conservation and sustainability, she said. We are proposing to utilize shipping containers or storage containers, something that particular neighborhood has seen before. For the neighborhood, local visitors and tourists alike, Anderson said the group wants to provide them with food options that run against the majority of current options in the area, namely chain restaurants. She points to the area adjacent to the Mission and further south on Southeast Military Drive as examples. Keeping the yard local will offer anyone the chance to experience San Antonio's food culture with local chefs at the forefront. We want to be able to bring those experts in and give them the opportunity to share what their vision or their creations are around food, she said. A lot of this is about providing opportunity. We're not going to have a Dunkin' Donuts in there. Pending approvals from HDRC, the group is ready to start work on the site immediately, though Anderson admits that they're still learning their way through the process. All three of them come from the corporate world and will continue working through the construction and operation of the site. A general contractor has yet to be hired. Alvin Peters at AP Architects LLC has been contracted for the overall design, and Anneli Diego Studio has developed branding and other concept work. While building costs aren't finalized yet, Anderson anticipates a 9 to 12 month construction timeline. This project is up for review by HDRC on February 1st. And this article was written by James McCandless. XFL running out of clock as crucial kickoff nears. The retold XFL will kick off its debut season on February 18th. The reimagined USFL, which doesn't launch its second season until April, has leveraged its network television partnership, locking in commercial airtime during NFL games to pitch its spring football brand. It's done so during a window when the third and likely last iteration of the XFL which debuts in less than 3 weeks, desperately needs to find an audience. The latter league, borrowing an XFL brand that failed twice before, and which counts after Dwayne The Rock Johnson among its new owners, has been deliberate, some might argue slow, in its pacing. It didn't reveal which cities would suit up teams until late July. San Antonio, one of the 8 new XFL markets, didn't know the name of its team until late October. That didn't leave a lot of time for building a Brahmas brand in a city that's been burned by one failed spring league after another, including the Alliance of American Football that couldn't finish its one and only season in 2019. San Antonio showed up in strong numbers for the AAF, leading the league in attendance. That team had an advantage as Commanders players and coaches were based in San Antonio and active in the community. It also had months to build an audience before playing a down. The Brahmas and 7 other XFL teams are working out of a hub environment in Arlington. They will have to travel for home and road games. With the time they spend in the markets they represent significantly limited. Brahmas head coach Hines Ward, a standout player for the Pittsburgh Steelers and part of the executive team that ran the AAF, has high hopes for success in San Antonio, on the field and at the box office. While Ward understands the cost savings associated with the hub approach, he also appreciates the importance of face time in a community. Even though we're in Arlington, I still want fans to have a sense of who we play for, Ward told me. There may be some apprehension in the Alamo City, especially early on. That's understandable given the past. Meanwhile, the Brahmas have plenty of seats for sale for opening day, a February 19th game at the Alamo Dome that will be televised nationally on ABC. If there is a half-empty building, it won't help anyone's cause. As the clock winds down, what the XFL and its teams need most is more time. And that article was written by W. Scott Bailey. Let's move on to food. 6 San Antonio businesses qualify as James Beard Foundation semifinalists. And the article is written by the data reporter for San Antonio Business Journal, Jalen Lopez. 6 San Antonio-based establishments are semifinalists in the 2023 James Beard Foundation Awards, highlighting the vibrant and growing cuisine in the Alamo City. Each year, the James Beard Foundation highlights notable restaurants and businesses across the country based on different categories. The categories include Outstanding Chef, Outstanding Bakery, Best Chef, Emergent Chef, and other celebratory categories. This year, 6 San Antonio businesses qualified for 4 different categories. Emergent Chef, Jennifer Hua Doberton, Best Quality Daughter. Outstanding Pastry Chef or Baker, Ann Ng, Bakery Lorraine. Outstanding Bar, Weathered Souls Brewing Company. Best Chef, Texas, Nicola Plock, The Jerk Shack. Best Chef, Texas, Andrew Ho, Andrew Samia, and Sean Wen, Curry Boys Barbecue. Best Chef, Texas, John Russ, Clementine. Best Chef, Texas, Ernest Cervantes and David Kirkland of Burnt Bean Company in Seguin. The 6 finalists are staples of the San Antonio culinary community. Bakery Lorraine recently announced a Burnie location, and Best Quality Daughter is a popular Pearl establishment. Texas had a notable presence in this round of semifinalists, as 41 restaurants and chefs qualified for the 2023 awards. The Dallas-Fort Worth area has 5 finalists in the Best Chef, Texas category, while Austin has three. Houston has the most entries in the Best Chef category, as four businesses made the cut. Nominees will be announced on March 29th. The winners will be celebrated at the James Beard Restaurant and Chef Awards Ceremony on Monday, June 5th, at the Lyric Opera of Chicago. The San Antonio Zoo adds new leadership. The article is written by W. Scott Bailey. The San Antonio Zoo has named William Freed as its new chairman. Freed brings the Alamo City attraction extensive experience in entrepreneurship and philanthropy, having served as president, principal, or co-founder of six organizations over the years. Freed has been a private equity investment principal and manager at Nuches Marketing Partners and is currently investor in residence at Trinity University. San Antonio Zoo President and CEO Tim Morrow said Freed has also worked as a volunteer with the San Antonio Zoological Society's Board of Directors since 2001. Freed succeeds Frank Rutenberg, who served as the zoo's chair since 2019. Rutenberg helped guide the zoo through a pandemic, winter storm Uri, and record growth. He also led the organization through the launch of the zoo's largest master plan in its 108-year history. On Rutenberg's watch, the zoo also opened a reimagined southern white rhino habitat, opened a new parking garage, and a Starbucks in Breckenridge Park. The zoo also renovated its F.C. Hickson Birdhouse and Kangaroo Crossing, among other attractions, while also opening a new Project Selva 4D theater and acquiring a pair of new trains. It's also provided a new home for the kiddie park. Frank has been an incredible leader for the San Antonio Zoological Society, Moreau said. Frank began as a tour bus driver here in the 70s, and nearly half a century later, still maintains that joy and commitment for San Antonio Zoo. Our trajectory wouldn't be the same without Frank's passion and service over the years. Rutenberg has served on the board since 1998 and will continue serving as the chair of the organization's nominating committee. The board is also gaining four new officers, including John Now III, Marianne Guido, Sarah Stumberg Walker, and Mary Rogers Barrett. I have no doubt that the San Antonio Zoological Society is in great hands as we look to the next 4 years of historical growth, including a state-of-the-art front entrance, world-class gorilla habitat, and more, Morrow said. And the next article I won't be able to finish, but let me just say, the article is written by James McCandless. CPS Energy sells vacant downtown lot to McCombs Property for $29.5 million. After 2 years on the market, local utility CPS Energy has sold one of its downtown properties along the Riverwalk near Pearl and adjacent to the San Antonio Art Museum. The 6.9-acre site at the corner of West Jones Avenue and Camden Street, formerly the Jones Avenue Service Center, was sold to McCombs Family Partners for $29.5 million. And right at the end of the article, they say McCombs Properties has not disclosed its plans for the property. You have been listening to Business News on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Dennis Martin saying goodbye from Owl Radio.